This is The Record on KUOW with David Hyde. I'm Ross Reynolds. Say, what is your mother worth? That's the title of the first chapter of Joshua Klein's book, Reputation Economics, Why Who You Know is Worth More Than What You Have. Joshua Klein has been a hacker for hire for a few decades. He's worked with big companies and small startups, and this is his latest effort, this book. Thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
So the title, What Is Your Mother Worth? What are you getting at there?
Well, when I started digging into this, I was discovering that the whole concept of money and being able to take value and represent it down to decimal points has become totally intuitive to human beings, to the point at which you can ask, what is your mother worth? And if you're Hallmark, for example, you can say, oh, well, she's worth $1.50 to acquire as a customer, or if you have a retirement home, maybe she's worth $1,000 or whatever it is. The point being to me that we've now taken something which on the face of it is priceless and put a number on it.
Well, our mothers are priceless to us, but to Hallmark, they're $1.50.
Exactly, exactly. So the reason that this gets interesting is when we start looking at what's happening with big data, where we are getting better and better at defining that value in a variety of different contexts and different situations. So, for example, now if you're in a very rich neighborhood and you go on Amazon to buy some toilet paper, you'll get one price. If you connect to Amazon from a poor neighborhood, you'll get another. So this dynamic personalized pricing is starting to get more and more advanced to the point at which your mother's value might be different at a different time of day to a different client in a different situation, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, you call reputation economies exchanges that use more or other measures than just financial currency. Now, people have been bartering without cash for a long time. The idea of trading on your reputation to open doors is also a very old idea. What's new about reputation economics in the digital era?
Well, originally, one of the things that doing trade or barter offered that traditional markets in some ways don't is the possibility for a double coincidence of wants. That's if, let's say, I make pots and you are a butcher. You happen to really want some pots but have a lot of steak, and I happen to really want some steak and have a lot of pots. We can trade at below market rate and get a better than market rate return. The problem with that is it doesn't scale. And if we both live in a small village, there might be only one butcher and one potter, and the chance that they both want the other thing at the same time is rare. Now, with the internet, you can find that butcher anywhere in the world and make that trade. So we're starting to see platforms that enable this to happen.
There's also the reputation we have online through social media, which is for some people have a big footprint, some people have a small footprint, some people are in niche areas, and some people are in broad areas. Is that part of what you're getting at too?
Absolutely. That's what makes this whole new reputation economy work. If I want to go and rent someone's apartment in the Left Bank of Paris, I can go online and Google them and get enough context about them to figure out whether they are a crazy axe murderer or not, or at least enough information for me to be confident in making that decision. And then further, to establish enough of a relationship with them to barter that rate to whatever suits us both.
What does it take to be good in the reputation economy?
The same thing that it takes to be good in any other network. You know, you need to be friendly, you need to be willing to do favors, you need to have relationships with people. In other words, if you're a shut-in, you're probably not going to do very well, unless you tend to spend a lot of time online participating in certain networks. And again, that's part of the potential of these reputation economies.
Now, there are a lot of older people online, but it still skews young. Is there kind of a dividing line here between those who can take advantage of it because they're native to the digital world as opposed to those who are settlers?
Well, yes and no. I mean, having facility with the different technologies obviously helps, but I can't tell you how many people who have retired and then, you know, heard about the book or read the book or whatnot and contacted me and said, you know, look, I retired 5 years ago, but now I've got a store on Etsy and it's absolutely booming, and I have to keep going downtown to meet with groups that want to find out how I'm doing my, you know, wood block printing or whatever it is. So really, I think it's more about people finding groups or niches or communities that they want to participate with than it is the technology itself.
So it's not just your facility at using Twitter or your ability to connect with people, it's who you are?
In a lot of ways, yes. And this is part of what's really challenging for companies, is it's about the relationship. And if you are doing one-to-many advertising where you're just blasting out a message, that's not a relationship per se. One of my favorite pages on Facebook is the Condescending Brand page, Condescending Corporate Brand page. And if you check that out, it's basically
– what kind of stuff's on there?
Well, it's all campaigns from big companies that have tried to, you know, get people to be involved with their brand without offering any real interaction. So, you know, like my cheesecake. You know, come and hit the like button. All your friends will like you more if you like my cheesecake. Well, no one cares about your cheesecake.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's ways, of course, to build reputation, but it's also a way that you can very easily lose your reputation, is it not?
Yeah.
And sometimes accidentally.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And you see all different manifestations of this. I mean, it's still the Wild West, certainly. You see things like at schools where kids have their accounts hacked and someone puts up something terrible in their name or, you know, marks them as suddenly being married or who knows what it is. Everything from that to like Bitcoins being stolen.
Let's talk about Bitcoins. If you just joined us, Joshua Klein is a hacker and the author of a book called Reputation Economics, Why Who You Know is Worth More Than What You Have. First of all, remind us what Bitcoins are, and then let's talk about why they're an example of reputation economics at work.
So Bitcoins are a cryptocurrency. Essentially, it's a little chunk of math that's very difficult to do. And once you've done it, you can verify that that math problem actually works out. So this means that I can go and use my computer for a long period of time and mine some. But more importantly, it means that I can then transact with you simply by publishing to an open record on the internet that I have sent that money to you. So this gets around a lot of the problems that, well, not problems, but some of the inefficiencies of the existing financial system in that it's instant, it's infinitely transparent, you can't rescind it after it's happened, and you don't have to attach it to a real-world identity.
So what – oh, okay. The last one is different than a credit card.
Very.
If I want to buy something online, they kind of know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And this allows for a certain anonymity.
Right.
Is that open it up to misuse or abuse or criminal use?
Well, it depends on your definition of criminal, really.
Terrorism. Sure. Because terrorists certainly would like ways to transfer money around, and because of the intelligence services, there are fewer and fewer.
Right. So, yes, it does do that. It's much more flexible. It's much faster. There's no fees or tariffs or taxes. In a lot of ways, it can be untraceable. But at the same time, that's also really appealing to a lot of people. And this is one of the things that I think is really curious about what's happening online, is that these sorts of technologies are appearing all the time, ostensibly something that would be appealing to the black market. But the black market's really big, and mm-hmm. it's growing really fast.
One of the things about Bitcoins is it's a very volatile currency. Your dollar might lose some value or gain some value, but Bitcoins go wildly up and down, don't they?
Yeah, the dollar doesn't usually lose 600% of its value in a day or whatever.
So you have to be able to tolerate that kind of risk.
Well, the real benefit there isn't necessarily that you want to store all your value in Bitcoin. Hmm. It's that you can transfer your whatever value it is, nearly instantaneously using it. So, for example, when Greece was having all of its problems, we saw a lot of their money suddenly going out into Bitcoin, and then they would deposit it, they would extract it again from Bitcoin into something like euros or yen, mm-hmm. dollars.
Now, a lot of times when we think about reputation, we think, oh, I got a network and I got to get a whole bunch more people who know about me. But you're a firm believer in working on your existing relationships. Explain why you think that's a better idea.
It's quality over quantity. So to give you an example, I had a friend who was one of the first people that was recommended on Twitter. So they first started saying, you might like so-and-so. And they had a list of 15 people when they first put this facility up. And so he got basically 1 million followers overnight. Well, if you look at the way people think about Twitter now, that's a gold mine, right? 1 million followers, that's fantastic. But what was happening is that he didn't interact with them a great deal. And so he wasn't finding that it was being very valuable. He and I got in a conversation about what you can actually do with this. And I said, well, with your network, why don't you ask this network questions? And he said, well, I do, but I don't always get a really good response. And the reason for that was he didn't have a quality relationship with the people that were following him, whereas I try and spend a lot of time with mine. And so I usually get good feedback.
So they knew of him. Maybe they were connected to him from LinkedIn, but they didn't really care about him enough to bother to respond to his questions.
Right.
And so how do you get that? How do you get that to build up? I suppose it's paying attention to them and they'll pay attention to you. Simple as that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It turns out that if you never respond to your friend's phone calls or ever have coffee with them or talk to them, it's not a very good friendship. Yeah.
A lot of people might be not as familiar with what we're talking about as you are, obviously. What would your one piece of advice be to someone who heard this and thinks, I would like to try to build my reputation. I would like to reach out. We've talked about one. Don't just look for quantity, look for quality. What else would you advise?
One of the things that I find very puzzling is that people often mistake sincerity. They forget about sincerity. You can bluster people for a long period of time, a lot of the time, but increasingly you can't do it very well. It gets harder and harder to do. And when people expose that you've been just giving them a line, that information just doesn't vanish. It stays online. It stays online forever. So
sincerity. That reminds me of an old line from Bob Edwards. He used to say, if you can fake sincerity, you've got it made.
There you go.
Hey, Josh, thanks so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Josh Klein, a hacker and also the author of a book called Reputation Economics, Why Who You Know is worth more than what you have. You're listening to The Record on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.